now that heart is beating fast, and that's the rhythm I can dance to. I'm mighty glad I've got a chance to that one big heart that's beating fast. Tomorrow morning, let it rain. Tomorrow morning, let it pour. Tonight, we're in the groove together. Ain't gonna worry about stormy weather. Gonna kick old trouble out the door. Beat out old trouble and drum. Beat out old trouble and drum. Beat out old trouble and drum.
Welcome to this special edition of Radical Australian Community Radio 3CR. We have four people in the studio. We've got the producer, Henrietta, who refuses to speak. Then we've got Julian and Sue Offal, who've come in. Now, Julian's going to
say Offal.
Offal?
Yeah, we say
Offal.
Well, it's awful when awful, I went awful, to school.
Awful. Well, yeah, awful. It? Yeah. Yeah. Well, where did you go to school, Julian?
I went to school in Boundary Road State School in North Melbourne in Boundary Road.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is either the oldest or the second oldest working recognised state, federal and state school. Barry Jones tried to do a history on it at some stage.
Yeah.
Because he was looking at he was an educationalist, poor fellow.
Now you were born in 43, is that right?
I believe that's true.
Now, any recollections of what, I mean, were you kind of the butt of school jokes because of your surname?
The Awful Offal was always a joke. Yeah, but so are a lot of other things. Yeah. I went in the primary school, was immediately, I get the years wrong.
Yeah, it's don't not forget about the years, just tell us
it's
about
kind of after the Second World War, and it was North Melbourne, which got there were a lot of very old 90 generation Australians in North Melbourne, and there were a lot of very, very new, some before the war, but more recent.
Yeah.
Immediate post-war. So there were...
Don't worry about that. I've been expecting that. So do you want to start again or what? No,
I'll
keep going.
No, I'm all over the place, but there was a guy called Oleg Rossiano whose father... had come, they said, from Romania.
Yep.
And they were very wealthy. I don't know anything about how. Mm. But they owned their own house, which no one else did.
Yep.
And Oleg would like to show off the wealth sometimes.
Yeah.
So he took me to meet his father with a group of other kids from the school. And his father produced a Roman sword.
Right.
From pre-Julius Caesar. Roman. Yeah. From somewhere in Europe, dug up in whatever it was. He was very, very, but he held it out and said, "You hold it." I couldn't have lifted it off the ground.
Yeah, it was that heavy.
So then pre-Julian people were very strong in the legs and the arms.
Have you got any recollections about your parents?
I got massive recollections because I got more parents than anybody else.
Why is that?
Can I do this?
Of course you can.
I was born... with a mother who had come from an all right off family.
Right.
Her father had been do you know where the Snowy Mountains are?
Yeah, the hydroelectrics.
Long before there was hydroelectrics, before there was a dam at all, he lived in a town called Adaminaby.
Right.
And there was another town just across called Jindabyne.
Right.
And when they came to do the very first dam on the Snowy Mountains, they said, "We are going to have to move your towns." Mm-hmm. And Adaminaby was the first one to be moved, and we will label every brick and we will rebuild it brick for brick right up the top.
Yep.
They didn't want resistance to the damming.
Yeah.
The cost of doing that, of course, was loony. And when they said to the people in Jindabyne, would it be all right if we didn't really rebuild yours, just fake it? They said, don't fake it. Build us a brand new town. We don't want any old rubbish town. So Jindabyne got rebuilt in so, modern form.
Yeah, so what's that got to do with your, with your mum?
Oh, what's that got to do? My mum was the daughter of a fella in Adam Innaby in the old days. And she was, he because they'd started to do the surveys after Snowy Mountains, he got work as a chain, well, initially a curry stuff, then as a chain man.
Right.
But he was a clever fellow, her dad.
Yeah.
And he, in those days, you got surveying jobs, you didn't even have apprenticeship really.
Right.
You got someone who would take you on and you would be apprenticed to them.
Yeah.
And they would accept your years of work and give you the whatever, and you could be registered. So he got registered as a surveyor.
Yep.
And this is no joke. In his early surveying days, he did some of Gippsland when Governor Gipps opened up Gippsland.
All right.
They just opened it up and said, we will pay an amount of money to anyone who will come and take a selection there.
Yeah,
they were desperate to develop Victoria.
Mm.
I beg your pardon, my brain's a
bit funny. But your mum, was she born?
She was born in a surveyor's camp near Sale in Victoria.
Oh, right.
Her mum and her dad were like that.
Right.
And when they were 3 months minimum.
Yep.
In the surveyor's camp. Then I went home and did all the drawings and all that. Yeah. Then they came back and did another three months. So the surveys took years.
Right.
Whoops, look how big Gippsland is, you couldn't blame. But in his coming, because they came initially from, well, I say initially, they came from Bowral.
Yep.
And he would come horse and those things with horns and a trade.
Yep.
And he met, now you have to remind me, two surveyors, man and wife, from the US, came and did the first looks around where to put the ACT, the Australian Capital Territory.
In those days,
What was their name? Can you remember?
No, but Griffiths.
I beg their pardon enormously.
Yeah, but just getting back.
Yep.
So your mum, she was born, where, do you know, she was born in Victoria?
Effectively in Sale.
In Sale.
Effectively in Sale.
And did you got any recollection about your dad?
Well, I got more dads than you've got.
Have you? How do you know?
Well, because my genetic dad.
Yeah.
Why I'm called Julian.
Yep.
Is after his mother.
Right.
Called Juliana.
Right.
Juliana is a lady who they picked up out of America after the Second World War with the tattoos on her arms.
Right. Right.
She'd been three tattooed.
Right.
With Auschwitz being the main one.
Auschwitz,
she had the pre-Auschwitz.
Yeah,
and she survived so much muck. They put her back in the first one where they were doing the monstrous, most
horrible,
horrendous
experiments. Yeah.
So she was a person of some stamina because when, I can't do this properly, when the war ended and they located all the people from the camps, they took her to the US, and later on the Red Cross recognised her son.
Right.
Her son had come, her son
had come here to Australia.
Had come to Australia, employed by a big tractor company the US, because old ploughing used to be boat with a hoe, and then it became a boat with a hoe and a horse, and then it became a horse and a... And then all of Europe got ploughed at least 300 or 400 years before anyone invented a horse-drawn plough or a stump jump or anything like that. So they never needed stump jumps.
Now, getting back. So you had a lot of dads, one mum, obviously.
Yeah.
Any brothers and sisters?
I've got two half-brothers.
I've
got an older half-brother with... All my brothers are with me mum.
Yep.
My mum, you were My mum was a lady called Kathleen Phyllis Yalden Harnett,
right,
who married a bloke in Western Australia and had a son.
Yep.
She was in theatre.
Yep.
And she was Workers' Art Guild Theatre when it became the Workers' Art Guild Theatre, but she was that earlier.
Yep.
And she got attached to the set designer,
yep,
who was actually an artist. He did, look, I have line drawings of his and etchings of glass trees and kangaroos and stuff. He was a bloke with phenomenal sense of balance and all that stuff, so that he was the perfect set designer. And I said, you could give him a brush and a tiny bit of paint and one flap and one other thing, and he could turn the set into changeable in from being the House of Doom to the Temple of Maharaja without even more than 2 seconds, or well, 2 minutes intermission. Yeah. So he had a, he and my mum had a daughter called Gerard Kennedy.
Right.
Gerard Kennedy became a very well-known actor.
Gerard.
And all that stuff.
Son.
What did I say?
Son. Daughter. Maybe you know something we don't know.
No. Well, that's a bit naughty because Paul Gerard, my mum left before he was born. And he was thrown into a nunnery and brought up in a nunnery.
Oh, right.
So that he had no proper real interaction in whatever sort. No,
let's not worry about that.
No, well, I'm not worried.
I'm not worried.
I'm worried about it.
No.
What makes a good actor is stress.
Did you get pretty sick when you were small? Did you?
No, I was the healthiest.
Yeah, healthiest bastard.
On the face of the earth. When I was born in Mount Barker Hospital in South Australia.
Yeah.
And my mum was lent the farm that belonged to the fella who was the manager of the ABC in Adelaide at that time. I can't remember anyone's name.
Don't worry about it.
But he liked me mum because me mum wrote poetry and she read poetry. She was a performer of high quality. And she was given a spot to read poetry and she could read her own and other people's.
Right.
But she was a proper person. She had to do international stuff, but she had to do Australians should be concentrating on their own culture and developing their own culture.
Right.
But what was the name?
Yeah, it doesn't. Look, names don't matter. I'm just trying to get a story about your life.
Did
you go to high school?
I went to Reservoir.
Reservoir?
Yeah. You went there. No, you didn't.
I didn't go to Reservoir.
No, you didn't. No, a lot of people did. John Smythe did. You know John Smythe.
Yeah.
Me and John Smythe got on very well at Reservoir High School.
Yeah.
And we wrote the principal.
Right.
Reservoir High School was built for the Housing Commission area.
Yeah, that's right.
Although there was already people who needed a high school in the area.
Yeah.
And all the not housing commission areas all lived in a funny road called Mouldy Cheese Road. It was Cheddar Road.
Cheddar Road, yeah, I remember. Yeah, Cheddar Road's still there.
Yeah, and Cheddar Road produced Terry Lanes and John Smythe and
all those people. Yeah.
Oh, God, the one from this morning.
Oh, don't worry about
it. Barry Dickens.
Oh, yeah.
They were all
Cheddar Road people,
I never got near. I wasn't allowed near Cheddar Road because I was scum. It's interesting. Because my parents were commo, they weren't just commo, they were active.
They were active communists,
My mum was really, this sounds stupid, to a moderately large degree, she and Catherine Susanna Pritchard, the writer, were who really made the Communist Party in Australia. It's a funny long story and it doesn't matter because a lot of other people, whatever. Yeah. But it meant that I was brought up with all the people.
Yeah.
I apologise for this.
No. Look.
But when we lived in camp, I was born in Mount Barker,
you told us that,
My mum mixed. What was the name of the damned?
No, Julian, I don't want you to get upset about names.
No, I can't.
Because we're just...
There was a coffee shop There wasn't really a coffee shop, bookshop thing.
Mary
Martin's.
Mary Martin's
bookshop was originally a coffee shop.
Shop, right.
But it also stuck wine.
Yes,
because it was close to them. Yeah. So that my mum read poetry and did stuff at Mary Martin's.
Yeah.
What was the name? Harris? Max Harris? No, I've crossed names. Well, doesn't matter. The bloke who brought Mary Martin's to Melbourne didn't start it, but he and me mum got on real close. When me mum became attached to the Mr. Offal, he was a kid. Mm. He might have been 19.
Yeah.
And in the coffee shop, me mum would come in the door and they didn't know when they're talking about her getting off. And they're saying, you know, Phil's getting off with that young kid, which was a bit of an embarrassment to her, except that she was 14 years older than him.
Oh, right.
And it's an interesting thing.
Yeah. So what did you do? What did you do after you finished high school?
I didn't ever finish high school.
You never finished?
I tried to do university part-time. Mr. Menzies, our Big Iron Bob.
Big Iron Bob, yeah, that's his right name.
Reginald, no, what's his name?
You know what Pig Iron, I'm doing some research for something.
Yeah, I know what Pig Iron is.
No, but Big Iron Bob, old Bob Menzies, in July 1939.
Yep.
3 months before the beginning of the war.
He said, sold out Japan.
Not only that, but he said history, history, history will label Hitler as one of the great men of the century.
Not only that, when I went to high school in Brisbane High School, you had to go to the library to get books. And the Preston Library, the lady who was the librarian there was a mad keen Adolf fan.
Oh, right.
And she had a shrine to him only where you went upstairs to the second floor to get it was a shrine it had and it had I can't now remember but I used to be able to quote the stuff in it, and honestly, really, she would try and convert you to Nazism. She did. It wasn't called Nazism, but she tried to convert you to fascism.
Fascism
is a funny name because what was his name, the Italian bloke?
Mussolini.
Mussolini started out a real socialist.
He was. He was.
And he did a real development that made the working class put him in, and then he went demented, poor. No one should get in power. 2 years maximum in any college.
Yeah, that's right.
You can have excuses for people where they have a 4-year break and a unanimous can put them back for no more than another 2 years, but that's the end, no more.
Yeah, so when you said you tried to go to university.
I went to high school. Yeah. My old man, this is a long story too, but my old man was like, he came from a no money background, but he came from a country town, well, country outskirts of Adelaide, and he'd wanted desperately, because somehow in the books in the house was Lemon and Ferrance, the physics textbooks from the US. They're brilliant, they're terrific.
Yeah.
But he had Lemon and Ferrance, and he converted himself to want to do university, although his parents wanted him to do the B's. So that he enrolled at the university on a part-time, a night school basis, as it were, where he worked in the laboratory and did all the preparation and stuff. And
How about you?
Well, I did the same thing by choice, only it didn't work very well.
No,
because
so you didn't graduate?
I'm the most undereducated person in the most educated requiring jobs I've ever worked. I worked for the Postmaster General's Department.
What did you do there?
I was... Can I tell you the whole
story?
It was R.G. Menzies' wonderful time where... It was like now where we said credit squeeze. Only his was complete. Not only were they not to employ anyone, they had to sack everyone, and that included the public service.
Yeah.
So the public service were sacking people.
Yeah.
And if you lost your job, you could never have it back again from the public service. If you had a job, you ran the risk of it, you being sacked.
Yeah.
But if you had a rotten job and there was a job you were much more qualified inside the public service, you could transfer from one to the other. So there were people who desperately needed transfer and who then asked for the trainer and chickened out and said, I'm unable to come at the moment.
Right.
In the credit squeeze we're talking about.
This would be the early 60s, the credit squeeze, yep.
It's not, it's 59.
Yeah, in the early 60s.
You went to a job
advertised
in the paper. You went in the door and there are 30 people in a queue waiting to be interviewed because you didn't get a job without an interview in
those
days.
That's right.
When you moved up the queue and there were 30 behind you.
Right.
And when you came out of the interview, there were 30
waiting.
And I went to one of those interviews with the 30 in a row for a job I had no desire to have.
You had to apply
for jobs.
Yeah.
I didn't. I got once only the unemployment benefit.
Yeah.
Once only.
Only once.
Although I was unemployed massively. I would go to the market and load the trucks. I would go to the...
You do a bit of cash work.
Cashies,
yeah.
Well, you do work for nothing
yeah.
if they give you a bite to eat.
Look,
honestly, I'm not crying poor.
No.
But you've got no idea... When I was at school in Boundary Road, it was still like that.
Hmm.
And occasionally you walk up the street and a lady in a house who didn't have a husband anymore or who had one and she had, but he was overseas in Japan looking after the Japanese or something. This is not silly.
Yeah.
The Japanese loved the Australians and they let the Australians marry the Japanese ladies because they hated the Americans and the American occupation stuff. And the Americans hated being there. So Australians went on preference to occupy Japan and then they wouldn't let them come home again even when it's This is only, it's not an exaggeration, it's a fact.
Mm.
Up the street from us in the Housing Commission area was, I'm not allowed to do this, am I?
No.
Ask me a question.
Ask you a question. I don't know where you're going there, Julian, so I'll ask you a question. So did you work for the postmaster all the time?
I worked long enough to get... I should have had the head of the...
department.
I worked... How I got the job.
Yeah.
I applied for the 30 in a row.
Yeah.
I had me sandwiches.
Yeah.
I don't know if you made sandwiches. I wasn't very good at it.
Yeah.
But I was going to the exhibition gardens to eat me sandwiches because you've been in muckle. You don't want to be.
Yeah.
So I'm going to the exhibition gardens up Exhibition Street.
Yeah.
Now, this same number, 242 to 244 Exhibition Street, is famous for another bloke. He got a job there as an apprentice toolmaker.
Yeah.
At the time when I'd been working there a fair while, here's this warehouse.
Yep.
And you looked in warehouses always because there was sometimes good stuff. But also, you could get two bob to help the bloke shift the bloody thing he couldn't carry on his own.
Yeah.
Or you might get half a sandwich or something.
Yeah.
So that you pulled open any open door. I pulled open the door because the padlock wasn't in the door. And there's a bloke right inside.
Yeah.
And he does this.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not a rude fella.
Right.
So I can't just slam the door on him. So I go in.
Yeah.
And he says, "Have you come about the job?" Well, I'm not allowed to tell. I was brought up to tell the truth.
Yeah.
I mostly manage,
mostly.
But there are times in the extreme, and you don't always know the truth.
This
is more often than ever.
So I asked you, have you come for the job? What did you say?
And I couldn't say no.
No.
So I looked blank-faced,
yeah,
but with eyes that were looking him dead in the eye. dead in the eye.
Yeah.
And because I'm looking in dead in the eye, he's assuming that's yes.
Right.
So he just says, "Can we go up the, go through the fire escape door, go up to the second floor, go through the fire escape door," and the officer immediately in there. And he must have rung the bloke saying, "There's the man's
new
come
bloke's
up.
Coming." Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody had made the application from somewhere else in the public service for the job and then chickened out going because he ran the risk of if that job was worse, he'd be worse.
Yeah.
So better stay where you are and don't get sacked.
Yeah. So what was the job?
The job was technical assistant grade one.
Technical assistant grade
technical
one.
Grade, yeah. With the Postmaster General's Department Research Laboratories Physics Division.
Oh.
My old man had wanted to be a physicist.
Yeah.
We haven't done my old man.
Yeah.
My old man's a dustman.
Yeah.
He wears a dustman.
Did you think you were qualified for the job, mate?
I knew absolutely I was not. But, no, see, do this.
Yeah.
What did I do as a kid? I wanted to do physics like my dad.
Yeah.
My dad was a phenomenal doer of things. He mended people's watches if he could for nothing.
Yeah.
But if, when he had to, he would take so much to... So I'd watched him with the microscope and a tiny, tiny Allen keys and tiny, tiny head screwdriver. He had a good microscope because he was big on optics than anyone else around, actually.
Right. So you were able to convince them you could do the job.
I didn't have to. They were so desperate. They thought I was this bloke.
Right.
And they had been desperate because they were now totally short-staffed and they couldn't employ anybody.
Yeah.
They had a couple of physicists who couldn't do the work without the assistant. So they had, but they also had, this is insane because there was a bloke called Armand Pompey.
Mm-hmm.
Armand Pompey was a Dutch bloke who had come after the fires in Holland and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So he was big on fires and we had bushfires in Australia and we had bad ones in 39. So that he'd come actually to be the head of a proposed bushfire research thing, but then they couldn't find the money to set it up because of the Depression and the war. So they took him, saying, "Be a physicist in the physicist area until we open, and then you'll be the head of
the department."
So they must have paid him better than they paid other. You weren't allowed to tell anyone what you paid.
Yeah.
Although the bloke came round in those days with the pay envelopes in the box. And he had an offsider who had a gun.
That's right.
And he had the bullets.
I remember that. That's
they weren't supposed to tell you the gun wasn't loaded.
That's right.
And they had, therefore...
Look,
they
it was
had,
normal. I remember those days when I used to do some work. The payroll blokes would come in and you'd all rush down to get your little brown paper packet and then you'd check what was inside.
You had to sign off.
Sign off, check what was inside.
But you had to check what was inside and sign the second time. Yeah. You had to do two
and occasionally you get somebody come in with a gun and try to steal the whole payroll.
Well, they were always frightened of that.
Yeah.
But actually, really, you wouldn't have done. You'd have waited up the top of the stairs, you'd have pushed
them
over...
Yeah.
Grab the money and run. Why, mate, you got a gun, you're in
big trouble.
And it was a death penalty.
Yeah.
I went to the Ronald Ryan anti-hanging demonstration on a long time. But on the day that I went, on the day he was hung, we went overnight.
Yep.
And I went with me mate who was became a police person.
Right.
Later on, because he and I knew, we demonstrated together on a lot of things.
Yeah.
So I knew not all police were ugly. Although when you lived in Campbell, Bluey Adams convinced you they couldn't be a good policeman on the face of the earth.
Yeah. So you're talking about demonstrations. What type of things were you involved in?
Everything, because
like
my mum was a commo and my dad was a commo.
Yeah.
And the original ones I remember most were because the nurses...
Strike, was it?
Well, nurses couldn't strike.
That's
nurses
right.
couldn't
strike.
They'd
right.
be hung and drawn and quartered because they'd threaten their lives.
Yeah.
So what you this do... This is not a joke.
Yeah.
So that when there were Wolfies strong and the trammy's strong.
Yeah.
What's his name? The trammy's bloke.
Oh, don't worry about that. Oh,
well, you've got to, because he's the most important fellow.
You mean the bloke?
The man who was the chairman of the
tramways. The one who got jailed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all right. Don't worry.
The bloke who got jailed, and Bolte said they can march.
Yep.
The bloke who got jailed.
No. When it came.
Clary O'Shea.
Clary
O'Shea.
Who was Lois O'Shea? Clary O'Shea had a daughter called Lois O'Shea. Do you know New Theatre? No, you don't know. New Theatre was Como Theatre.
Yeah, that was in the 50s,
I played in a bit of stuff there.
Yeah, but let's get back to Clary. So you're involved with Clary O'Shea, were you?
Clary O'Shea
was
a fella who could talk. And he
was jailed, and thousands came out on the streets.
Because he
was the secretary of the rail tramways.
Tramways.
And he was jailed for an industrial strike. Because in those days, you could be jailed.
Well, they'd come out not for themselves. Yeah. They and the wharfies had come out for the nurses.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got no idea. I do know, because we lived in Campbell.
Yeah.
What was the Royal Melbourne Hospital originally? The Royal Melbourne Hospital was in the Queen Vic building.
Yeah.
And when the Americans got frightened to death of the Japan entering the war, General MacArthur was in, what do you call that place up there? The
Philippines.
And he said, they'll bomb the Philippines.
Yeah.
And he panicked and rushed to Australia screaming, I need to be the saviour of the world by not being killed by the
Japanese. Yeah, let's get back to these demonstrations.
No,
I understand that. But let's get back. I'm interested in your story. So let's get back to these demonstrations you're involved in. Clary O'Shea, the tramway.
Yep.
There was Ronald Ryan.
But I'm trying to tell you that because of me and me mate doing the...
The hanging.
The hanging one. He and I knew each other. He used to give me a ride. He had a motor car. We used to go away together and stuff. Yeah. We were good friends.
Yeah.
But he became a police person.
Right.
And when... the moratorium, I worked in Hall's bookstore.
Right.
By the grace of a very wonderful fella called John Hayes.
Right.
John Hayes was right and I was left, and we made our whatever by argument. We were terrific.
Yeah. So that the Hawke store, that was the trade union store?
No, Hall's bookstore.
Oh, Hall's
was the secondhand bookstore, which supplied all the secondhand books to the kids in the high schools. I should tell about that, but it's 30 years talk. Ken Hall's had passed generation by generation, and you could submit a book requirement list from your school, and they would send the books to the school for you, and you paid them. Quite low price at the time.
So what about the...
Here we are. I'm at Hall's bookstore, and I say to Ken Hall, is it all right if I go to the demonstration? And he said, you can have an extended lunch hour and do what you like.
Right.
Don't tell me where you go.
Go into the moratorium.
So this
is the first one in 1970.
The big one.
Yeah,
the big one. Yeah, 69.
69 was it?
69.
Yeah.
I get everything wrong.
Oh, no, when Jim Cairns was addressed.
Jim Cairns was there.
Jim
Cairns didn't start at the start because it started with the other mob, the wharfies and
the mouse.
Metal trades.
CFMEU.
They start up the other top of the hill. BLF.
Yeah, the Builders Labour Federation.
Harry Bridges. BLF.
Yeah.
Down the hill this way they came.
Yeah.
I didn't know they were. I thought they were coming to attack
the march.
But as I'm going along the street, already there's noise from the talk, because they had big microphones stuff.
Yeah.
So you knew the thing had got started.
Yeah.
So you're rushing along, and here's Laurie Cuthbert, me police mate.
Yep.
And he says this. Well, he's me mate. I can't say.
Yeah,
I go, and he said, give us your hand And I'm giving you the hand on behalf of every one of these other blokes, the police.
All right.
They are 100% on your side.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
But it turned out to be absolutely the truth.
Yeah.
it's a bit funny when you go up with camper with camper, Bluey Adams is the police. But next door to us, there was a Campbell Huts.
Yeah.
Well, temporary housing settlement after the Second World War.
Mm.
There was a similar thing at Watsonia and another one.
That's right, there was Watsonia barracks,
And you all got packed 29 AD Area 6 we lived in.
Yeah.
29 AD was down this end.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Oh, God, the Ross is up the top end.
Oh, that doesn't matter.
It matters more than you think. All of what makes you is just a...
What makes
the Ross's dad was a returns from the Japanese body camps.
Yeah.
Messed and destroyed.
Yeah.
He had a wife, Doreen. Her name's Doreen. Go strike me pink. Right. He could have knocked me down with half of me. Doreen. Was his wife. She was a kid when they married.
Yeah.
They had two kids, one of whom had the most terrible body asthma.
Right.
I'm going to cry.
You're quite right. A lot of people came back from those Japanese prisoner of war camps totally destroyed. Skin and bone.
A lot of them couldn't cope and they ended in the park.
They were on the grog, and
they were worse than on the grog, they were starving.
You're obliged to do what?
I was brought up to say you help everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
It's easy to say. I'm not trying to say a good fellow.
No.
But I was convinced by the communists.
Yeah.
What's communism?
Yeah.
What's communism?
You're asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you. What's communism?
Well, it's supposed to be, you know, helping each other basically and having
community. Yeah, comes out of family. Comes out of a bit of extended family.
From the commune.
The village grows a little bit.
Yeah.
But you're all still.
Part of it. Comes from the concept of the commune.
So that's family.
Yeah.
So you owe.
Yeah.
Whether you get on with your brother or not, you still got to make sure he's
there.
Easy to say.
So after the '70s, I'm just going to move on a bit. After the '70s, were you still single at that stage?
Or? I've never been single.
You've never been single.
No, I was a very, 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 very strange man because I brought up because my mum had three husbands.
Yes,
and three completely different.
Fathers for the kids.
And because she was extreme, what is the word?
Social?
Anarchist. I was brought up anarcho-syndicalist why it's
anarcho-syndicalist from the industrial workers,
so syndicalist. So my mum was a real supporter of anarchism.
Yep.
But with that problem that when you got the bloody Second World War and you'd had colonialism in a way you had, sometimes you had to say, thou shalt not kill is only sort of absolute and you can pretend there's an excuse. Which was a big conflict for her and me always. I've forgotten whether you're anarcho-syndicalist. Ask me the question.
Well, you'd have direct links with the industrial workers. Your mum would have been involved with the industrial workers of the world.
My mum was she the would workers' have been, art guild
because she was new. Because a lot of the people, once the IWW was basically banned in Australia, a lot of the activists joined the new Communist Party in 1921, your mum would have been one of that
crew. My mum
crew,
was a starter Catherine Susanna Pritchard in West Australia, they wrote manifesto and stuff. And a Communist Review started very early.
Yeah.
I can't do it, my brain. Look, I apologise.
Yeah, no.
But
Like you said, there's the new theatre, your mum was...
But the other thing, my mum was born in New South Wales.
Yep.
And she mixed massively. Read poetry, went to the wine, whatever.
Yeah.
You mix all stratas.
Yeah.
And therefore, J.B. Miles ran the bulletin. Yeah. J.B. Miles started the bulletin.
Yeah.
J.B. Miles had a daughter called B. Miles. A lot of people pretend this story... Beatrice Miles, A lot of, I know this is true because my mum told me when I was that big, before whatever it was.
Yeah, when you're little.
What
little
a terrible tight. Thing she'd done to B. Miles because she and B had started to do nursing together.
Yeah.
Can't remember the hospital. And they both knew they couldn't do it, so they both stopped. And they both were literary, literate, all of that stuff. And they both got avenues through theatre and all that stuff to get a bit of radio stuff and so on. So they could do in those days when you did a play on the radio, you read it.
That's right.
On whatever.
Yeah. And they were very popular, those plays. They were terrifically popular. Because,
And they did good ones. Yeah. I can't remember now.
Yeah.
Bury the Dead.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, which was internationalist, Andy Warhol.
Yep.
Good stuff. Brilliant bloody
stuff.
So, God, I'm
sorry. Don't worry about the microphone. It doesn't hurt. Yeah.
No, I've forgotten. My brain's addled.
No, I was just asking.
Oh, my mum did all this stuff. Yeah. So she mixed 97 levels in society. When the B Miles drove, she and B Miles used to write to each other.
Yeah.
And for some odd reason, my mum had some theatre-related thing she had to do in the morning, and there arrived a taxi, and out of the taxi got B Miles, and me mum said, "G'day, B, I'll see you later on. I've got to do something."
Yeah.
And B Miles didn't hear properly, and thought her mum had said piss off.
Yeah,
so that she jumped back into the taxi and drove all the way back.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
My mum didn't realise till later on what she'd done. But I know this is a true story because she told me this big.
Yeah.
But B. Miles forgave her, sort of, later
on. Yeah. Now, Julian, what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to direct you in a certain direction. Yeah. I know, being an old anarcho-syndicalist, I don't think you'd like to be directed. But after the moratoriums, did you continue working for a while?
I worked at the Postmaster General.
No, after you were working at the bookstore. The bookstore? Hall's Books? You're telling me you're working in the 70s, you're working at Hall's Books. And you got permission to go, you had an extended lunch to go to the moratorium.
Yeah, yeah.
So you'd finished with the Postmaster then, or you just...
I worked with the Postmaster General in a brilliant job. I should never have left. My brother had gone, he was travelling around the world and something went wrong.
Yeah.
And he ended in Queensland working on a drilling rig, drilling for phosphate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he rang, I can't remember, he rang me because I had the PMG phone number and he knew how to contact me.
Yeah.
He had a need for something to be done. He rang to get me to do it. So I said, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And then he said, you know anyone who wants a job?
Yeah.
Well, it's a long story, but there was a... this is naughty because the boss in the physics division was of German origin and we called him the Führer.
The Führer, right.
Most unkind because he was the absolute...
Opposite. Yeah.
And he was a very fine, employing fellow. But do you want a job? And I said, yes, I do. Mm. No, do you know anyone who wants
a job?
He said, I said, yes, I do.
Yeah.
He said, you do. Go immediately to the lady's name at this thing there. Yeah. It'll be there in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Just put in your notice. Let them dock your pay. Yeah. I'll get them to fix for you. Us. We are desperate.
Yeah.
And he was desperate on the drilling rig drilling for phosphate.
Right.
Do you know phosphate's radioactive?
Didn't know that.
No. No one did, but all the blokes who were geologists who went during the rum jungle, big uranium, whatever, when the uranium said no, they still had the detectors and they pretended they were looking for phosphate because it let them have, you weren't allowed to go looking.
For uranium.
You were not allowed.
Right.
But you could have the phosphate detector because we had that phosphate because we'd stuffed Nauru.
Right.
Do you know about the Nauruans? Yeah. When we stuffed Nauru, I worked at the PMG.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. I worked at St. Vincent's Hospital when we stuffed Nauru.
What were you doing at St. Vincent's Hospital?
I was a big deal electron microscopist.
Oh, really? Electron microscopist?
Yeah.
How did you wangle that
I always get jobs I'm not qualified for.
Right.
And I do it for a while because they've got no one and they say, well, you can do something.
Yeah.
But the electron microscope was bought for renal unit stuff.
That's right,
The lady, at St. Vincent's, who was the renal specialist.
Physician.
Was a wonder.
Yeah.
But she was mad arch Catholic and she wanted to work with Mother Teresa.
Oh, right.
In India.
India, yeah.
Which she was doing.
Yeah.
But her mum got crook.
Yeah.
And she had to come back because her mum was dying.
Right.
She swears her mum made it up.
Right.
And they got it together. But she had experience of seeing other people's electron microscope stuff. And she demanded some, if she was going to be there,
she wanted
they
somebody.
Had to have an electron microscope.
Yeah.
But she didn't know how to drive one.
Right.
So they had to employ a microscope, technician.
Which is, you.
And a lady in England who wanted to come to Australia but who was really Canadian applied for the job pretending she had seen a microscope, but she'd never even seen one in operation. But she pretended that she'd had experience and was given the job. And when she arrived,
she couldn't do it.
She couldn't do it, which meant that the microscope sat there, and occasionally someone would come from outside and do
the pathology.
Dr. Clifton's pathology there.
Yeah.
Or run the microscope and let Dr. Clifton do it with him, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But a bloke called my most favourite renal person of all time.
Right.
Oh, isn't this terrible? He's a wonder beyond all wonders because he was a head of anatomy at Melbourne University.
Right.
And he became head of the university and then he became whatever it was.
Was it Zelman Cowan? No.
No, it's after Zelman Cowan.
After Cowan.
Do you know Zelman Cowan lived in Flemington or Parkville for a short period of time? Yeah. He came to our hut in Campbell a couple of times.
Yeah.
He was interested in your mum's writing, not in and politics.
Yeah.
He was a proper comma.
Yeah.
Did we do the serum labs?
No, you didn't do the serum labs. What about the serum labs?
I'm about to be hit by lightning.
Hit by lightning?
Yeah.
Well, I hope I don't get hit by lightning.
The serum labs needed technical people.
Right.
And it therefore needed people who could do temperature control My stepdad, Dad, had tried to go to the university in Adelaide when the war was coming.
Yep.
And he got conscripted. Two cars, not one arrived. He panicked. Two cars, they only seen one.
Right.
So he thought he was going to jail.
Right.
But instead he was conscripted from working in the lab in the physics department at the university into CSIR.
Right.
He was a clever fella. And he had the ability to sensibly research. And he knew the need for the temperature control. Do you know what's a Galway?
No.
Named after a bloke called Galway, who was a French bloke who knew gas.
Yep.
And if you made a mirror turn on a thing, you could get a magnified needle length.
Right.
And they made internal reflecting.
So what did you do in the serum laboratory?
Very little.
Very little.
I went there But it was the people in the serum labs who came to my place.
Right.
Don't hit me.
Yeah.
There is now a pretending...
Right.
There's a bloke called Jack Legg.
Yeah.
Who had been to the war, came back. In the commos who were important in my life, are two people who believed in education beyond anything.
Right.
Even more, they may have had something to do. What's the name now of the big educationalist in Melbourne? What's it?
I don't know the big
educationalist. You know, because he's Edna Everidge. Edna Everidge. Who played Edna Everidge?
Oh, he's dead.
He isn't.
Yes, he is.
Is he?
Yeah,
all right, he's dead. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He created
education
in its modern form.
Did he? Well, I don't know about that.
No one does. He's underdone.
He's underdone, isn't he?
He's underdone by a mile. He was a very,
very
good...
Oh, don't worry about him. When did you retire?
I never retired. I was
sacked. So you were sacked?
I was sacked.
Well, you're sacked because you're old.
I was sacked because the electron microscope,
they
thought.
Yeah.
This, can I do this?
Yeah. Keep going.
Sorry, Murray. I only say Murray because no one knows who you are.
Right.
But instruments in a hospital are vital.
They are,
And
yes.
Then after the Second World War, immunisation and all of that stuff and a whole lot of sterilisation techniques and all of that.
Yeah.
You could do stuff, but you ran the risk of cross-contamination, all of that stuff.
Yep.
So all of the... Initially, they threw away the instruments.
Right.
You did an op, you chucked the instrument.
Yes.
You couldn't afford to do it with scalpels. Then they invent the replaceable blades. But even that's too expensive. You can't afford the replaced blades on the number of ops you've got.
That's right.
My brain went. There's a boat called... Sorry, Murray, but I had to do it. A boat called Murray, who saved me more than 100 times from being sacked.
Right.
Because...
you're indispensable, that's why.
Well, I was all right because he knew what no one else knew.
Yeah.
And when they wanted to sack me, they wanted to sack me for a couple of reasons, which had more to do with left...
Internal politics.
Internal politics and
stuff.
Yeah. Although the, what's her name? The matron of honour. What's her name? The Mother Superior. And I were in love with each other.
Right.
We met at a bicycle when I was going home early in my first time there. And she and I looked at each other and give me a kiss. Sorry, Sister Maureen.
So you were fired eventually?
I was eventually fired by the bloke who became head of medicine.
And what, Melbourne University?
No, well, he was. He got it.
Royal University.
No, it was Australia.
Australia.
Yeah. What do you call him?
The chief medical officer.
The chief medical officer. This bloke became the chief medical officer.
Yeah.
When I first worked at St. Vincent's, he was a bit keen on a bloke from Scotland who they used to talk about Scotland and things.
Yeah, so they got rid of you.
He wanted to get rid of me always.
Yeah.
And when he got to be the chief medical officer, he could do it.
Yeah.
Only Murray saved me over and over again. I didn't know.
Right,
Because... Right. I was worth a lot of money to St. Vincent's Hospital. I didn't know.
Well, you're doing a good job, obviously.
Yeah, but I knew what was sensible.
Yeah.
And when you had the electron microscope, why they wanted to get rid of it was because they thought it was costing them money. Murray knew it was saving them money. Because the electron microscope control stuff was on the first floor where the prison unit was.
Oh, yeah.
I went up in the lift with the bloke who shot 26 people off the thingy-me-bob
more
than once.
Yeah.
He cut bits off himself to get in the real hospital.
Yeah.
They have a hospital in...
St. Vincent's, the prison hospital. They used to have a prison hospital.
Have you been in it?
Oh, I know about it.
Yeah,
that's all I'll tell you.
Well, I know more about it than you.
I'm sure you do. Now, hang on. Now, how long have you been not working for a wage? What do you reckon? A decade, 2 decades?
How old am I?
Yes.
I'm 84.
84.
84. I stopped in...
What?
79.
12 years. 12 years. Yeah. So how long have you and Sue been together for?
Since 1970.
We got married in Tassie. Come closer, Sue. Come on. we need you to say a few words. Come up to the microphone. Come on. You've been sitting there being very pleasant. Come on. I mean, 1970. Come close to the microphone. Bring your chair closer. Don't worry about me. I'm not going to bite you. Keep closer. I'm sure he bites you more than I do. Now, you need to come right close.
She wished.
So you've been with this old bastard since 1970.
Yes.
What's life's been like?
Crazy.
Crazy.
Yes.
And it's getting crazier?
Yes.
It is.
Yes. Now that he's older.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's been interesting, has it?
Yeah, very interesting. Yes.
Can you tell us a few highlights? Don't tell us the lowlights. No highlights.
Tell us.
Have you been overseas together or anything?
Yes.
Yeah, where have you been?
Oh.
We first went to Ireland.
Ireland, yeah.
Wales. He wouldn't stop off in London. He planned to do a week in
London. But he refused, did he?
Yeah. He stayed in Wales.
He stayed in Wales. Yeah, and where else have you been?
We went to China.
Yeah, when was that? When did you go to China?
A few years after that.
In the early stages.
It was the time
six
of
weeks.
The...
6 weeks.
Three weeks in China.
Right.
We went to China.
Silk Road.
Yes.
It was an embroidery.
Yes, yes. But he didn't.
He
was happy
so
to
he
do
came
it.
And then we thought we'll drop off in Vietnam and...
Right.
Cambodia.
Do you remember what years that was? Was it in the 80s, 70s, 60s, 80s, 90s?
No, it's only more recently.
More recent, yeah.
Like 2000 and
yeah. Did he
2011.
Did he behave himself?
Yeah.
He did. He wasn't arrested?
No.
He tried
But in China, he kept walking. He
kept walking.
Along the wall.
Yep. Wouldn't stop.
And I wasn't very fit. Yeah. And this New Zealand lady.
Yeah.
Had to go and
grab him.
Bring him back.
4,000 kilometres he had to walk if he was doing the wall, was it?
We're just doing a little bit of the wall, but...
Right. He kept going.
The time limit was up.
Look, all I can say, Sue, is...
New Zealand lady had to grab...
You've done a wonderful job looking after Julian because he's not well.
Yeah.
He's not well. And he was very adamant he wanted to come into the studio and speak. And I felt that it was important that he came because he's had... A lot of
interesting life.
Interesting life and a lot of insights. You should be a very proud woman. He's on insulin now, is he?
He's always been on insulin since he was 11.
Yeah. Well, look here, you
13.
Old. Look here. I asked you whether you're a fit kid and you said you're fit as a fiddle. You lied to me about the insulin. It started at 13.
I should never have had the insulin.
What do you mean? You would have been dead.
I'm in terrible trouble. Nobody should have insulin. Serotonin.
You'd be dead without the insulin.
No, I would be better alive.
Would you?
This is not a joke.
Yeah.
There's a four times the peer review paper on insulin, which you can't easily get.
All right.
I'll provide you.
Provide me with a copy.
I can give you the reference number.
You can give me the reference.
Yeah. And it proves, without question, the administration of insulin is a mistake.
Only for
banding and best because they chop the whole.
That's why you would be one of the longest survivors on insulin in this country. You've been on insulin for 71 years, which is extraordinary.
One day in the supermarket 100 years ago, there was a poor lady in the queue, and you had the queue, you went in order and you couldn't push in. And the poor lady in the queue is unable to fix her pay the money.
We've been given up the wind-up sign.
Right.
We've finished.
I offered to pay the money and she wouldn't take it.
Yeah.
She had been on insulin from the day it got into use. She was one of the first users of insulin in Australia.
She'd be dead now and you're still alive.
Unfortunately, she was 100 when I saw her.
So you've done really well. So the fact that you've been on Insulin for 71 years, that's extraordinary. But what's more extraordinary is that Sue's put up with you since 1970. So thank you for bringing him
it's
in.
It's more extraordinary she married me in the body first. I said it was a mistake.
Yeah, well, there's a mistake she can't rectify. But thank you very much for bringing Julian. I know it's been a wild ride we've had here, but he had some very important recollections regarding the past that a lot of people are not aware of. Thank you very much for coming in.